For July the 11th, 2014, we talk about Shovel Knight, what's the deal with esports, and we ask you about the best gaming values. Welcome to the 67th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, back from a break. We did our BioShock jamboree, and then we took a little bit of a hiatus, a siesta, and we're back in action with the normal stuff. We had a little bit of talk off air about what happened over the break, but how's everybody doing?
I'm good. You know, I went into my cryo chamber, just set it for 2 weeks. I'm back out now, so... Well, what happened in the intervening time for you guys?
Well, that's funny because my vacation, I just got a whole bunch of Dimetapp, and every 6 or so hours, I would just drink about a half bottle of that, so I would be asleep, basically until we got back on the air here.
I just went through a tear, so I didn't even have a break.
Oh wow! still the same session. Let's go. Yeah. Huh. Wow. We've wasted our lives. So.
Screw you guys. I went to work.
I'm not talking about like a vacation from, work. I'm talking about vacation. I'm the only one who took a vacation, really. Mm-hmm. Well, you did too, Ben. But I don't know. Cool. So we are back with the usual stuff here. We got the news section. We got a multiplayer. And why don't we round out everything with a little bit of what we have been playing in this time. So, it is time for The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world, especially as regards video games. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer with, leading first?
I have a story should... Oh.
Me first! Go ahead, Dennis. You spoke first.
No, so this is it almost deserves a... For those who have been listening for a long time, this almost deserves a portrait of shame. there is a new, quote unquote, new game coming to PS4, and that is Beyond Two Souls.
Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, so apparently there's a rumor going around that Beyond Two Souls might be ported to PS4. Because, Sony knows that there are a lot of people who own a PS4 who didn't necessarily own a PS3, so there's a whole new round of suckers to try that game.
Oh, yeah, so there's basically the time from HD Remake to... or the time from initial release to HD Remake is now a week.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Okay, so I'm gonna pop you on some hypocrisy there. How is it bullshit that Beyond Two Souls is doing this and Last of Us is not bullshit?
Because Last of Us was a good game.
True. But I mean, the question isn't why are they remaking a bad game. The question is why are they trying to sucker people into buying something quote unquote new.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this. Honestly, this is very judgy of me, but this almost speaks to like the weakness of the PS4 exclusive lineup, that they're like delving into the dumpster to pull out this bad boy. So, I mean, The Last of Us, I think, is, easily, I would not be way off base to say it's kind of the defining game of last generation. And so I could definitely see people saying, hey, there's a lot of people coming to the PS4 directly who never got a chance to try it on PS3. Mm-hmm. We're being jerks about, well, not jerks about backwards compatibility, but backward compatibility is hard to do. So let's give them a chance.
Well, I mean, but they've also got this PlayStation Now thing. So if this was them, there has to be another reason for them to try and do this. Because, yeah. Because with PlayStation Now, it's like, okay, backward compatibility is moot as long as you have the ability to stream these things,
Yeah, it's also, it's a director's cut, quote unquote, which I don't know why you would want, what is his name, David Cage?
More of it.
Yeah, put more of his spin on anything. Mm-hmm. But it kind of highlights to me the ridiculousness of the level of special editions and director's cuts and this and that. I forget what the diagram was going around, but I think it was for Watch Dogs. There were like 8 different versions of the game that you could get.
No, you're underestimating that. It's closer to like 20, 21.
Really?
If you wanted to get every last piece of content developed for Watch Dogs, it would cost you like $1,200.
Yeah, like
you need the Platinum HD Director's Cut of the Year edition.
Yeah. Well, you need that, but you also need the Platinum HD Director's Cut of the Year edition from Australia, because that gets you a different color hat.
Yeah, and then like
violence.
Yeah. The Last of Us was a really weird game in Australia. but like, and then I just saw a headline, so don't quote me on this, but I think the Destiny beta has a collector's edition. The betas now are getting collected. Well, I mean, and we've talked about how games are now in perpetual beta. They'll never actually be finished. So maybe that makes sense. But yeah, the betas have collector's editions now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that as we all get more divorced from that market, it's going to start getting weird as the companies get more desperate about it. Like the whole joke about how it's not the Xbox One, it's the Xbox One, the all-in-one entertainment center by Microsoft or something like that. It's gonna keep getting weirder and weirder. Okay, guys, things will get worse as we get older.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we're the ones who are holding everything together. Mm. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
A voice of reason in this industry.
How can I be sure you guys exist when I close my eyes?
I think there's a question that's covered in Beyond Two Souls. God knows they cover every other thematic question.
Have you? I mean, you speak with the vitriol of somebody who's played it and been given time to it.
I quit around the North Korean underwater base.
Oh, that's like that's straight up the end. So,
yeah, and I think I can't believe I didn't quit before that.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're fine.
At any
doing
point
that
in the game, are you in purgatory?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just, there's, I think we talked about it at length. Someone can look at what episodes it was. Because we all went around and played this, I think.
Yeah, in staggered order.
I saved myself.
Yeah, so
how,
I think it,
how did that happen? Because usually we spread like good games to one another, but how did we not stop one another on this?
Well, no,
one?
it's because I played it and I gave it the benefit of the doubt as like this is an interesting storytelling experiment. The story's not that good, but it's an interesting experiment,
right? And it's like it is a super interesting experiment and idea, and I love the concept behind Quantic Dream. It's just like they kept on being like, okay, here's a really cool premise and we're just going to screw it up a little bit. Okay, yeah. So you're still with us? We're going to screw it up a little bit more. Still with us? We're going to screw it up a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're starting to doubt. Here's the final nail in the coffin. Underwater sea base!
And yeah, they're the Portrait of Dorian Telltale.
Yeah.
Well, so this was like we're doing like the Manhattan Project defense. Like, it was a really interesting experiment.
I say that all the time. I value novelty. Have you not learned this?
So, you know, for Cole, I know you're itching for the chance to play it again. So whenever you get your PS4 for Bloodborne, make sure you get the Beyond Two Souls Director's Cut of the Year Special Edition Vita Cross-Buy PlayStation Now bundle.
God. Sony, what are you doing?
See, what I'm really waiting for is when the the Street Fighter version of Dead Rising. What's that one called?
Oh, it's like Ultra.
Yeah, once they start having to tack HDs and remakes and director's cuts onto that title, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, no, my favorite. I heard about this on other podcasts of note. Is Super Time Force. Their updated edition is Super Time Force Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Initialize that. STFU. Pretty good. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with my story next because it's pretty brief and it just happened today or on Tuesday if you're listening to this when it comes out. But the new Humble Bundle is up and it's really good, you guys.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Humble 2K bundle, which just looking at the top cuts here, you got Bioshocks 1 through Infinite. Then there's also Spec Ops The Line and XCOM Enemy Unknown. And then there's
I didn't realize...
Good.
I didn't realize all three of those games were 2K games.
Yeah.
That's a good lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And there's also, like, you know, The Darkness 2, which I've heard is pretty good. Mafia 2, which, and then The Bureau, XCOM Declassified, which everybody shit on, but might actually be good. I've never played it. But I will soon, because I can play it now, because...
Oh, don't lie. It's going to go into your backlog for 6 years.
Well, you know, I will own it. Yeah.
How cool is that site, by the way?
Oh, yeah. We should talk about that. So... I discovered in the Something Awful thread about the Steam sale when that was happening while we were away. There was a link to this website called The Backloggery, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, which acts like a personal games database that you can, you know, put all of your stuff in and keep track of, you know, whether it's beaten, completed, you're still playing it, haven't played it, with the idea being, you know, you can roll up and, you know, say I'm working on these ones right here. You can do like little personal ratings. You can share all this with people, but the social component is really minimal. It's not like Raptor or anything like that.
No.
And the thing that I like about it, and what I'm actually using to help, you know, fill my time and get me to play different stuff, is the fortune cookie, which is like kind of the randomizer. So you can basically put in a bunch of filters and say, give me a random game to play, and that's how I picked the game that I beat over vacation.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah. But it's great. So, you know, I just I found a little shell script that pulled all, you know, my entire Steam list in, and you know, I'll also put in a link to my and your accounts there. And it is a sobering look at the idea that that I have, let's say, 623 games.
Yeah.
Yes, that is across. Basically, I took the time to enter every game in. Most of them are on PC. The vast majority are on PC. And of those, I have only beaten 235 of them. So,
did you enter games that you'd already completed?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So you went back in the archives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
I only put in games that I have not beaten yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how user-friendly was the shell script?
Oh, it was pretty user friendly. So you just load it up, and then when you go into your command, you just put in there's like the source of the data, whether it's Steam or a text file, and then the destination. Then you can put in different arguments about do you want to overwrite, do you want to take away any duplicates, etc., and down the line.
Does it just harvest it from Steam?
Yeah. So you point it to Steam and you give it your credentials. And then it goes to town. Like that part of it took like 3 minutes.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
And then, you know, I already have lists and lists of all the games that I own in physical copy. So
So will you still keep the index cards?
Just because. But I haven't kept the index cards updated in a while. So, yeah.
No, now he can print off new index cards.
No, I wouldn't do that. It's hard to print index cards. What's your experience with this thing?
It's great. So, I mean, I entered everything manually. I didn't realize you could go into and automatically download from Steam. But my Steam library isn't actually that big, so that wasn't too bad. And then I just kind of went through my drawer of games and my download list for PlayStation Plus. And so it probably took me an hour to get everything uploaded. But it is really nice just to see all the stuff. And that fortune cookie I haven't used yet. Mm-hmm. But it's been really cool to just kind of scroll through and be like, oh, yeah, I own that game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. And it's great motivation to kind of go back and try things that you've already shelled out for. So you might as well. It's made me realize that PlayStation Plus is the devil when it comes to a backlog. Like on a level with the Steam sale, because it just gives them to you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't. There's no, you know, it's no opt in or anything. It's just like, here's more games every week.
Well, and what's funny is you're a clod if you don't take advantage of it. So if you pay for PSN, like,
yeah,
you know, I think that what, you know, a sane person would do is just look at the ones and say, I'd be interested in playing that, and then they go in and download just the specific one that's free. It doesn't automatically happen. So you actually have to opt in to getting all of this downloaded, right?
Yeah, you do have to download. Although that's like a ritualized for me. Yeah,
yeah, I just always have a calendar reminder.
It's a habit. Yeah. The one thing that I don't like about Backloggery is it's got so many options for what stage you're at with the game. So there's like unplayed, unfinished, beaten, completed and mastered. So mastered mm-hmm. is like 100% all the trophies.
No, that's completed. Mastered is if you you know, basically have set a special goal for that and, you know, marked it.
Oh, you set your own goal.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it's all user defined, so it's basically just a big database. Like the way that I distinguish that, I had that problem initially too until I realized beaten is if I've seen the end boss, like if I've seen the credits roll. Completed is do I envision myself coming back to this to play anymore?
Okay, so that's kind of, and if you read the actual definitions, completed is seeing the end boss, or like beaten is seeing the end boss. Completed is like gotten through to 100%, and then, you know, mastered is beaten the special goal or whatever. And so I actually wrote into them and was like, hey, love the idea for the site. You need like a done with option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where that, it's like, I haven't beaten this.
Wait, isn't
but
that
I'm done
mastered?
I mean, completed. I think completed sets that up.
Maybe, because, maybe like, you'll have to use that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I beat Waxworks over, you know, over my vacation. I would never come back to that. That, and also over the course of beating it, you see everything in there. You know?
Yeah, but then, like, not, let's say you don't even reach the end boss, and you're like, hey, I'm not going to finish this game.
Oh, yeah.
So it's technically unfinished, but I've gotten everything that I want out of it, and I would no longer consider it part of my backlog.
Or yeah. Like in Fallout New Vegas, like, I don't care at all about House or whatever that dude in Vegas's name is. Mm-hmm. So, like, once I complete the Caesar storyline, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, the game's over.
Yeah, well, the police aren't going to come and, like, break down your door if you claim one as if you claim one as beaten. There's also a way, like, so for ongoing games, like Binding of Isaac is a bad one because it actually does have an end. You can complete that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can actually just mark it as, like, not applicable. So, like, Team Fortress or Counter-Strike, you can just put that in as, you know, NA, and it doesn't count towards any of your stats. And you can still filter by that, so.
And that's if, like I said, I only put stuff that is actually in my backlog. It sounds like you went through and just did your entire game library.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's really great. It's fiddly in a way that I appreciate being the kind of person that I am.
Yeah, they've got, like, it's funny the number of options there are, because you can put, like, you know, the game name or the title, which I'm surprised that doesn't give you a drop down menu based on what other people have entered. Mm-hmm. But the game title, the system it's on, the original system. So, like, if you're playing a PlayStation 1 game on PlayStation 3 or whatever, like you said, you can put reviews for it. It's just really in depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that it doesn't have a huge social component. Like, it has badges or something. So, you know, like, it shows different things, like, oh, I have 100 plus unfinished games, woohoo, and you have the, you know, the ability to share your, you know, like, oh, your Steam ID and all these kind of things. And then you have, like, a minimal friends list, so there's, like, a multi-tap where you can see a little bit of what they're doing, but it's not like, hey, link this to your Facebook, or, you know, you can use it exactly how you want. It is just a database that has a really cool front end.
How cool could that be, though? I mean, not that I want it to plug into Facebook, but let's say, you know, once a month they kicked off, like, a gaming book club, essentially. And it's like, hey, you know, as a group, we're going to play through X game. I see that's in your backlog. Mm-hmm. You know, just sign up if you want to kind of share the experience. Because the worst
they
part is finishing.
Like... Because the titles are entirely arbitrary, I don't think they could do that.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah,
see,
so,
again,
like,
that's why I was surprised there wasn't a drop-down menu. But think the worst part about a game is beating it and having no, or like watching a movie or anything, mm-hmm. beating it, finishing it, and having no one to talk to about it. Because everyone played it 5 years ago.
I mean,
so that could be a really cool idea.
Everybody should just get a podcast and then don't put it on the internet. Because they would be competing with us. Yeah.
What if they join the Duck Feed Network?
No, lifeboat's full.
someone on Twitter, I forget who, was like, you know what I should do? I should start a new podcast for every day of the week and put out an episode every day of the week. And I was like, whoa, not everyone can be Cole Ross here.
Yeah, that was Travis. That was Travis Meckler.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, so backloggery, that's pretty cool. I don't know. I'll share my stuff just because I am proud of this database that I put together.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool for the Steam sale too.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a bunch of different stuff. Let's see here, Ben. How about you?
Yeah. So let me drop the article in the link. But my story is about the future of Gearbox.
Oh, yeah. Grim?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll probably buy this thing. So I don't know if we covered this in E3, or I don't know if maybe we did, and it just was very quick. But the next game by Gearbox is going to be called Battleborn, and it basically looks like City of Heroes mixed with Borderlands, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Just kind of over-the-top caricatures of superheroes with guns or swords or superpowers, and you walk around a weird landscape and kill things. So, yeah, it might be cool.
I hope the Randy Pitchford quote about this was, like, joking or ironic, because it is the worst, like, slaw of marketing speak you've ever seen.
Which quote is that?
It was his tweet announcing. It's Battleborn is FPS, hobby-grade co-op campaign, genre-blended, multi-mode, competitive esports, meta-growth, choice, and epic Battleborn heroes.
Good yeah, God. I really hope.
The trailer looks awesome. The description from you know, that guy, not so much.
He might as well have just spit salt in my eyes. just like nuzzled right up next to me, mouth to eyelid, and just spat salt in my eyes.
All that's missing is social connected.
Oh, man, affiliate links. Discount Viagra mattresses. Fuck. So are you interested in this for the multiplayer angle, bud?
Well, I was going to say, at least he didn't say that he's shifting business paradigms.
Yeah. True.
Apparently, according to this, he's calling it a hero shooter as opposed to Borderlands being a shooter-looter.
Mm-hmm. Which I like the name shooter-looter, man. That's pretty
cute.
Yeah,
but I feel like shooter-looter sounds like something I would want to play. Hero shooter sounds like something I would see in an esports.
Hero Shooter, it also doesn't even sound like the coolest game with that description, because a game where you shoot heroes sounds a lot more fun than being a hero and shooting things. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Inverse Arkham Asylum?
Yeah,
you have to be the guard. Pro tip, don't walk under statues.
But yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I'll probably check it out just because I was a pretty big fan of Borderlands 2. So
is it sad that when I see esports, all I think is, oh, they're just going to make a console MOBA?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a first person shooter that's not Call of Duty that was specifically designed, only has multiplayer modes for esports. It's actually pretty fun to watch. The name is escaping me.
See, by my experience, they're usually not fun to play. They're fun to win if winning is why you're playing. But if you're playing just to play, usually it's not so much.
Yeah, and that can... But, I mean, the way it was designed was that, you know, it's small teams. I think it's like teams of three versus one at a time. So like one team is defending, they have all three people on the field. And then the other team is attacking, and there's only one person can attack at a time. And so it was very easy to follow everything that was happening at once. Whereas a Call of Duty, you know, with a 60 player match or whatever they have, is kind of, you know, doesn't follow as well. Someone send in what this is. I can't find it. Yeah, but anyway, it was that they made it small enough that you could follow it. Whereas, you know, esports culture aside, you know, a Call of Duty game is kind of hard to follow on the macro level what's happening.
See, but I would argue that's what's wrong with esports is I don't play video games to like sit in my chair with a pipe and be like, oh yes, I can strategically follow this game and understand it. I play video games to have effing things explode around me in every different direction and, like, hundreds of guys be running around slinging bullets.
Well, no, I mean, okay, that's why you play, but there are people who, you know, esports kind of built into that is the idea that it needs to be observable, and more it needs to be commentatable, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea of making something like a MOBA that has, like, a definitive kind of, like, push and pull in the pace. You know, like a game of football or hockey or soccer or whatever, you know, kind of makes it with the viewer in mind.
Yeah, right? I don't have a problem with MOBAs just because they're their own thing that's, you know, kind of divorced from everything else and is set up to be kind of the best example of what they are, which is basically what would football be like if it had awesome superpowers. I just feel like when you add esports to other genres, to genres that aren't explicitly esports, it usually makes them worse. Hmm. But no, I'm it doesn't do much for me personally, but I think the way that like League of Legends and Dota is set up is actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be just next gen consoles. Or yes. Current gen or whatever. Yeah. And PC.
And in 2015.
Yeah.
With every other game.
They're busy. So they've got, what is it, Borderlands, the pre-sequel, which has the Insane Clown Posse in it. So they got that going for them.
Wait, what? What?
I love the disdain in your voice. Yeah. There is an ICP connection at Borderlands.
Oh, no.
No, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like... That kind of makes a lot of sense.
There was a Top Gun reference in Borderlands 2. So you know anything is on bounds. They've kind of gone through all sorts of different references.
Wait, are you comparing Top Gun to ICP?
No, I'm just saying they pulled from a lot of random stuff.
All right.
So the game I was thinking of is called Shoot Mania.
Oh, yeah.
Extrapolate.
Just the whole... That whole... I know. That game was basically if... You know, if you took... Literally everything I like about shooters and do the exact opposite, you get Shoot Mania. Like, you know, just about everything. It's like, what, I think it's like one-shot kills on everything. Mm-hmm. Every single gun is like an, you know, no-hit scan guns. It's all like, you know, oh, this is a sport, so we've made everything not violent.
Wait a minute, what do you mean by not violent?
Like, there at least when I was like, look at it was very explicitly like we want this to you're not actually shooting guns, you're shooting like the Nerf things.
It's like rocket launchers and a laser sniper rifle, so
except that it again this was maybe this was like earlier on in development, but like it was very explicitly like these aren't weapons, no one gets hurt.
Oh.
I mean
seems like an odd thing to care about.
Yeah, that doesn't affect the game though, like it's still, you know, you're still pointing something at somebody and a number goes up when you hit them.
They were going after that middle-aged mom audience.
Well, that or they just didn't want they didn't want the gore to get in the way.
Well, that's fair. Yeah.
It just struck me as a little, I don't know, PC.
I mean, I don't know, PC or non PC in a society, it doesn't really affect the game too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see here. And David, how about you? Round us out.
Actually, kind of speaking of esports, my article, apparently Just Dance is going to be added to the Electronic Sports World Cup.
What?
So I can't decide. Like, I'm not. This isn't a rhythm dancing game that I'm personally that familiar with, but I feel like potentially like a dancing like esport game could actually be either really awesome to watch or incredibly disappointing.
If you've ever watched someone who's quote unquote serious about DDR in an arcade, it's very disappointing.
See, my experience has been, again, that's actually kind of what I'm basing on, is there's either the person who it's awesome because it's someone who like has spent enough time to actually like dance as they're doing DDR, or it's a dude whose like torso never moves from the spot and his feet are doing like river dance. And I feel like one of those is awesome. One of those is maybe missing the point.
Yep.
That's weird because I associate Just Dance with being the real, like the more casual one. And then that may just be years of working at unnamed video game retailer. And just it always selling out for the Wii every Christmas, as you know, moms came in and bought it for their daughters. Not being sexist, it's just a thing that happened. It seems like an even more casual, not Dance Dance Revolution. What is the one? Rhythm Heaven? Not Rhythm Heaven. What's the Harmonix one? Fuck.
Harmonix did like a full body motion one?
Yeah, Dance Central.
Yeah. Oh, Dance, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like an even more casual Dance Central.
Yeah, I know nothing about it. I guess I was wondering if maybe this is one of those things where kind of the more casual approach, makes it more amicable to esports in terms of like being maybe a little bit more gameplay focused as opposed to like I know some of the DDR, like some of the high level stuff of that can just get sort of weird, like, so many things flying down the screen you can't even tell what's going on kind of again with the shooter thing. So maybe it's something like that.
Yeah, but like if you want to see someone who's really, really good at Just Dance, I think you watch like So You Think You Can Dance. Like you go watch an actual dancing competition.
That's a really, yeah. I mean, like I thought, how would they do that? Like, how would that work with like a Rocksmith? Like, would Rocksmith be an eSport and you're competing for score because it does have a score mode? But it's like, well, no, then they're just playing a song and probably not playing it very well because they're like a rock band competition kind of thing, like a singer. Like, actual singing is different than singing to do well in rock band. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. So you're playing to hit all the notes versus I would rather hear someone like do a really cool performance on stage and miss several of the notes than play it perfectly.
Yeah.
And have
your
soul.
Yeah. So it seems really that's a bizarre move. The more I think about it. And I don't know, maybe it's because I don't cotton to the notion of esports that well. So that's also my thing where I just kind of seems like a bummer all around.
The game I really want to see be esports, well, other than like Marvel versus Capcom is just epic watching people who know what they're doing. But other than that, I really think the Assassin's Creed, like, wherever the hunter, assassin.
Yeah, yeah. The asymmetrical, like, the hunter becomes the hunted kind of thing.
The one that was like in Brotherhood where everyone gets a name.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that's one of those games I feel like it could be awesome, although I feel like maybe it would be a thing where like at the high level, like everyone would figure out like, I've exactly memorized, how NPCs walk, and if you like twitch slightly, I know it's you, or alternately like I've realized that the optimal way to play this game is just to run around in circles. But I feel like if people played it quote unquote right, I feel like that'd be a lot of fun to watch.
People playing things right is never,
Well, you know what I mean? Like I said, quote unquote, if the optimal way to play it actually was like trying to play it as this, this intelligent, like assassin versus assassin, game, I feel like that would be kind of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. You know what this makes me think? Where the fuck is Spy Party?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yeah. did that ever actually, like, happen?
It's been in development for 6 years, and they just take it to shows and, like, show it, and it's in beta now, I guess, but it's, like, it's beta funding, so you pay $15, which I'm fine with, but... just bring out this game for fuck's sake.
At some point, you got to say it's done.
Yeah.
Like, let your baby go.
Because if you don't say it's done, you can't have an HD remake.
A week later. Yeah, I heard about another game that's kind of like that, the kind of the same idea, which is called The Ship. It's on...
Yeah, that's on... that was... I think that was, you know, at one point kind of one of the big games on Steam.
Yeah, it was, because like they sold so many, or they gave out so many free copies that it became a de facto currency. Yeah.
As opposed to a fiat currency, which is...
Oh, not this again.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, which is our listener participation section. Let's see. Dennis, what was the question that you asked the nice people?
Not the question that I asked, Cole. Not the question that I asked. We had Geolaw actually suggested a question this week.
And his word,
I thought
is
it was
law.
A great one. Yeah. His word and his name is Law. But it's a great question, given that the Steam summer sale just ended. And the question is, what is the best value you can get for $20 spent on games? So this isn't just trying to get the most length, because we all know that length doesn't necessarily equal value. And the $20 doesn't have to be spent all on one game. So yeah, given all the crazy sales stuff on there, what's the best way to blow that? Who's on a 20? Jackson? No.
Yeah.
Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah. Old Hickory.
What's the best way to blow Jackson?
What's the best way to blow a hickory?
You have to be careful, because otherwise he'll, you know, chase you around with his cane trying to beat you to death.
Or challenge you to a duel and kill you.
That's Hamilton.
It was Hamilton.
No, Jackson dueled a bunch of people and killed them.
Hamilton like died in the duel.
President to have, at least personally, have committed murder while in office.
Huh.
Damn.
Why don't you get us started, Ben?
I'm looking up how many people Jackson killed in a duel.
Okay, well, how much?
Jackson,
how much...
kill count, go.
How about you, David?
Sure. Tim Schumacher says, for me it would be some combination of Spelunky, Binding of Isaac, FTL, or other modern roguelike games. I've gotten far more than $20 of value from any one of those games, and expect I'll be playing them for years to come. These games very much are not my thing, but really seems like, in particular, Spelunky, with its, like, you know, it's got its, what, like, daily challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And my understanding is, am I thinking of the right thing?
Yeah, you are.
No, you are.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, my understanding is a lot of people that becomes, like, very much like their, like, lunch break at work or whatever, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's it was a ritual for a lot of people for a good long while. And basically what those daily challenges are just seeds that are sent out to everybody, so it could go on for essentially forever.
And it's nice because that, in the case of Spelunky specifically, you know, the entire game is random. That is the one place you can get a shared experience. Like, I am playing the exact same levels that everyone else is going through.
Yeah. Yeah. Binding of Isaac and FTL are a little weird insofar as I love both those games, but if you're talking about being able to play them indefinitely, you know, Binding of Isaac definitely does have, like, I've beaten this boss or, you know, these levels, you know, like, surpass this, and I've collected all of these characters and done all of the challenge stuff. That said, you're always going to see a different thing every time you load it up, but there, you know, there's a greater sense of completion for that than for Spelunky, which I understand does have discrete levels and bosses and things like that, but because there's less you're working toward in Spelunky than Binding of Isaac, it feels a little bit more perpetual. Same thing goes for FTL and unlocking all of the ships. Go ahead, Ben.
I was not going to say anything.
I was going to say, have you beaten FTL on, like, normal mode?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever played it on anything other than easy mode?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never gotten out of easy mode. I'm a fragile little doll in easy mode, so I have no idea how you would ever get far enough. You know, I can't beat the regular boss in easy mode. I can't even get there half of the time.
That's not insurmountable.
That's Dennis speaking right now. Dennis.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. Is it seems to me like FTL almost has a little bit of the kind of the net hack thing going on, where, like, you can play it forever and never necessarily ever beat it, but still be like, you know, and still be like a big time fan of the game that's, you know, really into it. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of more the journey than the destination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it's good catch there, Tim. Jala says, Left 4 Dead 2, Zero Gear, The Binding of Isaac, Portal 2, Trine 2, Gone Home, The Stanley Parable, Transformers War for Cybertron, Double Dragon Neon, Castle Crashers, Plants vs. Zombies. Although a lot of those are basically given away, that's over $20. Still, my point is that you get any number of indie games or older big-name titles during the Steam sale for amazing prices. I think Skyrim was under $10 last time, wasn't it? I was on convalescence from a double whammy surgery as well as a spinal nerve injury when I got it, so I've played ridiculous amounts. 114 hours or so? Damn. Since I couldn't do my training or make art. I'd say that's well worth the price tag of under $10, though I bought it long before the price drop. I've also played Resident Evil 6 for some 100 hours or so, thanks to playing through it with several friends multiple times, and multiple times with Slate, which was about $20 too this last go-around. And how much was Dishonored? Between Steam sales and Humble Bundle sales, there's never a lack of stuff to play, and often far too many things in the backlog. See about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I want people to hop up on that backloggery tip. Also on backloggery, they're the people who make those crazy 90s era style hint videos for bosses or for games like boss guides.
Is that like where they're all like fake?
No, it's not where they're all fake, but they have like weird inaccuracies. So it has like VHS distortion, and like for the Dark Souls 2 one, instead of saying Iron Keep, they call it Magma Mansion.
Yeah.
instead of the Royal Rat Authority, it's Authority the Royal Rat. Stuff like that. Those videos are fucking great. And the same company or the same people who make the backloggery make those. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. All those are really good. And it's funny because, like, does the $20 count for... Does that count for sale or non-sale? Because you can make $20 stretch a good long way on a sale.
Yeah,
see, I feel like, at least on Steam, there's a certain degree to which, like, the sale price is the price, and...
It just doesn't exist, except for those four times a year?
Well, I'd say, like, the initial price is almost has become, like, an early access.
Huh.
Or maybe that's just me being cheap. It's very likely me being cheap.
It's an economy of the cheap.
You're the cheap. Have a video, man.
That's a good one. I'm going to write that down. Yeah, no, not the cheap thing, but economy of the cheap. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Good stuff. And Ben, how many people did Andrew Jackson kill?
Sources may vary, but some say 13 and some say in the hundreds. According,
Was he Paul fucking Bunyan?
Well, this is also according to Cracked, so yeah. They might use some liberties with their language.
Some say 13, some say a shit ton.
A fuckload of epic random bacon, lol. He's only number 5? I mean, I understand that, Teddy is going to be number 1, but...
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. God, stop paginating your shit. Like, you're not fooling anybody. I know you just want more clicks, but... Stop paginating your articles, you people.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway.
You people.
By which I mean opportunistic web publishers. Ben, what's David say?
David says, a toss-up between Civ Humble Bundle, Civ 3 through Civ 5, with DLC plus Pirates, and Oblivion and Skyrim Game of the Years.
Pretty good. Yeah.
I feel like Civ Humble Bundle sounds like just if I never want to... like leave my house again.
Yeah. I'm waffling back and forth on whether or not I want to get Civ Rev 2. Which is out on iOS right now. Yeah. Looks pretty good. Yeah, Civ would be a great one. Yeah. I got Skyrim's like legendary edition for like $13.
Oh wow.
On the Steam sale. Yeah, so let's make this like a combination. Like, what do you think is the best value for $20? And also, what was your haul on the Steam sale? have you managed to pick something up? Yeah, so I think I got out of it. I made a spreadsheet. I didn't spend more than $5 per game. Like, if you average it out, there were some that went over it, but in general, that was about what it broke down to. Yeah, so I feel like I did pretty good. I still spent a lot of money, but it was just. Spread out over a bunch of different things, and Yeah. So what's weird is, like, I've ended up rebuying a bunch of games that I already own on different systems just because I want to have them in my Steam library in case anything happens. And
have
I figure,
you heard about Beyond Two Souls for PlayStation 4? It sounds like something you'd be into then.
By which I mean, if I see something like L.A. Noire Complete Edition, A, I don't have all of the DLC. B, I might be interested in playing L.A. Noire again. And C, I would rather have it on my Steam machine than on my, shelf, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing goes for Skyrim. Never bought any of the DLC, and I got all of it plus the main game on a system that I can mod and stuff. Oh, and it will always exist as long as Valve is in place.
It will always exist.
Yeah. On this machine forever and ever, for less than the cost of one of those things. So, like, what's happening is I just have a bunch of games that I can sell or get rid of because they are redundant. And so I don't know if I just want to, like, put those up on, like, a internet garage sale or something. I don't know how to get rid of a game because I'm sure as fuck not taking them to GameStop.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The store that is now named.
Go ahead.
This is kind of tangent, but is it weird? My mother's, cleaning out, like our, basement where everything gets stashed, and, found a box of like a whole bunch of the, games I had from like, since I was real young. Mm-hmm. Is going through like, hey, which of these do you want me to garage sale? And is it weird that like one of them I'm keeping a hold of is City of Heroes just for sentimental value, even though you literally cannot play that game?
No, I don't think that's weird.
It's like a trophy.
Yeah. Sentimentality is a thing. Like, acknowledge it.
That's not what the Borgs say.
Yeah. Yeah. So my answer to this question would probably be something boring like, oh, Minecraft is less than $20. You can, that can, because of mods, that can be infinite things. And I am a big fan / proponent of anything where you can make your own fun. So like if you were talking about like a, if you had to live in a one game universe kind of thing, that would be the one I would say.
Nice.
Not my favorite game ever, but if you're looking at value, I've probably put more hours into Minecraft than most other things.
So. I think I paid $5 for it when it was like in pre-alpha and no one knew who the hell the guy was.
Notch was, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. How about you, Dennis? Did you pick up anything on the sale?
I actually got a couple things gifted to me, so I was horribly negligent in actually buying something. Mm-hmm. Oops. But Richard, who is a fan of the show, hi Richard, actually sent me a copy of One Finger Death Punch, which looks freaking amazing, except it's not good on Mac. So I forwarded it on to David, and David, I don't know if you got that.
I've got that. I've not been able to get that installed yet.
Okay. So you're going to have to tell me how it is. Cause I was really mad that I couldn't actually play it. And then I also got, what's the name of it? Something Noir Syndrome. Yeah. And I think that came from you, David.
Yes. I will be talking about it shortly.
Okay. I haven't had a chance to play that yet. However, I got that gifted to me. And then also just by virtue of browsing around the store because of the sale, I came upon a game called Arena, where Arena is like A-E-R-E-N-A. Mm-hmm. I've been back on the whole XCOM tip and was looking for, grid-based, turn-based strategy type of games. And that seemed in the same vein. So I haven't had a chance to play that either, the Steam story. but I downloaded that at least.
Hmm. Well, what was the first one that you got as a gift? I'm sorry.
One Finger Death Punch.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
A rhythm game plus kung fu.
And the thing that just, if I can speak about a trailer for a game, mm-hmm. Like the amazing thing is that I always lament when game trailers are just movie trailers essentially. And this game is too stripped down to even be able to accomplish that. But it is like the perfect case for like watching the gameplay makes you want to play this game.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't require any explanation. You get it instantly looking at it and it looks so freaking cool. So thank you very much, Richard. And hopefully David will play it in my stead.
Yes, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. So I'd like to also put out some thanks. Thank you to Jolla for sending me Zero Gear, Kart Racer. Haven't played it yet. David, thank you for sending me Noir Syndrome. And Mike, thank you for sending me Broken Age.
Nice. Oh, and for best value, Eco and Shadow of Colossus HD Collection is $20 on Amazon. So,
oh,
yeah,
neat. Thanks. Yeah. How about you, David?
All right. Well, first off, for best value, I was initially going to be snarky and say my best value right now is paying my monthly fee for WildStar, but. that required me to have already bought in a $60 game. So I would say right now for me, I would probably go with the Sunless Sea, which is slightly discounted right now from $20, but still close. In terms of my haul for Steam sale, I actually spent a fair amount because I bought both the Burial at Sea, or not Burial at Sea, but the season pass for BioShock Infinite and Resident Evil 6, both of which were relatively expensive. And then I bought, Orion Dino Beatdown or whatever. Because it was incredibly cheap, and because the way Metacritic screwed the game over really pissed me off. And then I bought a crap ton of copies of Noir Syndrome. Ben, if you ever get a PC, I have so many Steam sale games that I will suddenly gift you with.
All right.
Yeah.
You have a PC backlog without even having a PC.
I do because I've been buying games on a Humble Indie Bundle that are like, yeah I want to play those, but I can't play those right now. So
I actually wonder about LA Noir because, like, for the I forget exactly what it says, but for the video card, it literally, like, in the little Steam like system requirements says like it'll pretty much run on everything.
LA Noir, what? That's pretty, it's a pretty intense
LA Noir,
game.
Not LA Noir, but
Noir. Yeah, Noir Syndrome, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Not LA Noir.
Yeah.
So, yeah, was there another question, or was that it?
No, I think you hit it.
I think they hit
yep.
it.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? Best gaming value? I know that you probably didn't pick anything up on the Steam sale.
Yeah.
Unless you did. Sorry.
I did not. But I will answer the question in context to what I did this last weekend. Played a bunch of retro N64 games that were a whole bunch of fun. So I think if I had $20, I would probably try and hit up like a Goodwill and
nice.
Smash Bros, Perfect Dark, GoldenEye, good stuff. So.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, I think you win this one actually.
All right.
Yeah. Cool.
I've always wanted to go back and beat Perfect Dark.
So we had a pretty awesome derail. we played Perfect Dark over the weekend against entirely Fist Sims, and we did one hit kills with like laptop gun and shotgun to try and set up like a perimeter. It was great.
Nice.
See, that's something I've never gotten is like, how has no other game ever done the just crazy like different AIs you can do? Because that was so much fun.
They have. I know. There's an N64 James Bond game, The World Is Not Enough, that had a very similar kind of thing where you could have people basically characterize them with different levels of aggression.
Yeah. See, I'm talking more like modern games, but could you just do levels of aggression, or could you actually do different like personalities?
Yeah, you could do personalities. So there was, you know, this person's going to camp or turtle, or this person's always going to stay on the move, etc. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
I even played that game and I don't remember that. That's crazy.
Huh.
Was that the third person one?
No. You're thinking of Everything or Nothing.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for responding to our multiplayer question. If you want to get in on the action, it is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast where those go up generally on Tuesdays. Yeah. So next week we're not going to have a traditional multiplayer because the multiplayer section is going to be taken up by an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we want to announce that now?
Yeah, I can talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game that I have not seen a lot of people talking about yet, so this is really exciting. It's called Beyond Eyes. So eyes as in like UIES. And it is freaking gorgeous and an amazing concept. And I could go on and on and on about it, which I'm sure we will do in the interview. But the developer, a bit of context for the game first. You play as a blind girl who is trying to find a cat that's run away and is trying to navigate an unfamiliar world, obviously without her sight. And the game obviously has visuals, but it does an excellent visual representation of what it would be like not to have your sight, maybe, done up in kind of a watercolor style. The fact that you can kind of only quote unquote see the things that you've directly touched or the places that you've actually walked, and everything else is just kind of this blank canvas, makes the game really intriguing. I've never seen something like that before. And then really beautiful because you can kind of look back and see this watercolor trail that you've blazed through the environment. So it's an amazing concept. We should hopefully have a chance to play a demo of the game before we talk to her. So that'll be fun, and hopefully we can bring that experience to you guys. And then the developer of the game, I hope I'm saying this right, Sherida Halito, is joining us over Skype to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch the trailer or check the game out to any extent, but it looks fantastic, and yeah. I can't wait to learn more about it.
Yeah. So it's going to be real exciting. Let us know if you have any questions about that or that treatment, and that is at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'll put up a post about it so people can find the stuff.
Yeah.
Find awesome. The stuff. Do the thing.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind. Sorry, I almost forgot what this is called. It's been too long, you guys.
He's relaxed his brain away.
Ooh, you know it. So this is where we talk about the games we've been playing. What?
I just want, you know, the whatever vine of that's my secret, I'm always angry.
Uh-huh.
I just want Cole for that, only like, that's my secret, I'm always stressed.
Yeah. So how do you handle it, Cole? Oh yeah. So I don't know. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can hit it up.
Do it.
So as was kind of alluded to in the multiplayer, one of the big things I played is during the Steam sale, I picked up Noir Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really quirky game. It's a lot of fun. Although I feel like Noir Syndrome sounds like it should be the name of like some awesome like disease. Like, you know, hey, you know, I just talked to Bill in accounting, and you know, I asked him how his weekend went, and he told me it was like, you know, an empty crypt, ultimately meaningless, yet somehow still foreboding. Is everything all right?
I think you're referring to Max Payne-itis.
Don't worry, he just has Narcindom. I asked him if there's any medication for it, and he's told me that he takes a gin martini, dirty and on the rocks, just like his soul. So it's this sort of like, highly pixelated, I would say like just slightly better than Atari era, maybe, graphics. And it's basically a game of Clue. You go around to these various locations, you talk to people, and they'll give you, suspects. And each suspect has a profession, a gender, and then what is aligned with either the mob, civilians, or police.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you inspect areas, you'll find clues. So, for example, if you find, like, bullet casings, that might tell you, oh, the suspect is either in the mob or in the police. Yeah. And so then you try to narrow it down and before time runs out, and identify the person and arrest them.
Hmm.
But it's also got, you know, you can do things to, like, for example, anger the mob by robbing them, and then they'll try to shoot you. It's just, it's really a strange game. It's kind of rickety. It's not, you know, it's sort of, I don't think I've ever actually failed the game beyond things where, like, I stole something in the middle of the mob headquarters and got shot. So, like, strictly speaking, as a game, it's not that great, maybe, but it's definitely worth just playing and having the experience. So,
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. And let's see, what else have I been doing?
I mean, Noir Syndrome looks great just because it's a procedurally generated mystery adventure game.
Right, exactly.
Like, you couldn't write a better tagline to get me, like, brr?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So in practice, just a question about it. In practice, does it kind of play out like you said, like a game of Clue, where really it's got a cool surface over it, but you're just kind of putting the pieces together? Or do they do a lot in terms of writing it differently for the procedurally generated mystery?
That is the thing where I was saying, like, it's a little bit has some weaknesses as a game. It's very much a game of Clue. Like, it's probably, like, the procedurally generated thing doesn't work maybe quite that great. But it's one of those things where just the overall presentation and, you know, the weird, like, Prohibition era setting and the jazz music and stuff like that really makes up for it. But it is very much just like a Clue or like a kind of like some of the Carmen Sandiego games.
Nice.
Yeah. There you go. That's the ticket. Also a way to get Cole interested. Cole spent a lot of time at public libraries.
Yes. The other mode it has, which is a little weird, is it has a party mode, or not party like multiple people, but like basically you're in, instead of being different locations you can travel to, you're just in this huge mansion, mm-hmm. and this, you know, a murder is on the loose at this party, and so you have to go around this single area collecting clues and suspects.
That's great.
However, the thing is, the guests at the party will randomly, you'll get a message that they've gone insane, and at that point, if they see you, they'll try to shoot you, and then eventually they'll regain their sanity. So it becomes almost like those Atari, you know, those Atari era games where, like, it was all like, you know, like climbing up ladders to like dodge enemies and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, Keystone Cops.
Yeah. So it kind of becomes a combination of that with like Clue on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, you know, one of these modes that, like, it's sort of gimmicky, but it's, you know, it's a lot of fun to be like,
yeah,
that just
awesome.
Happened.
Yeah. Sounds really great.
Yeah. So I would definitely recommend it. It's not that expensive, and it's, you know, they at least are, I think right now it's early access even. So mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully they'll add even more stuff going forward.
Yeah. Cool. What else have been playing?
One of the big ones we touched on a little bit, but I wanted to just give a couple of feelings was the original BioShock. I beat that en route to preparing for a BioShock Infinite level.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. Can I mention spoilers on this, or how's that work?
I think the statute of limitations has passed. Ben, you're more
sensitive
though.
It's been out for so long.
Yeah, it's been out for a long time. I'm
okay.
Actually fine on that.
It got spoiled to me, the fact that, like, Fontaine and Atlas are the same person. Pretty early on, I accidentally stumbled upon that, although I never got spoiled the whole would you kindly angle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you came to that fresh?
Yeah. I mean, granted, you obviously, like, right near the end, it does, you do start to put at least a little bit some of that two and two together.
Like when you walk into a room and it says, "Would you kindly" on the wall?
In yeah, blood? So
I would say one, like, I would say, though, there is never anything to real explicitly imply, like, mind control, even at that point. But also, like, the element of, like, you being Ryan's kid is not, at least for me, was not obvious until fairly late on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to have Jack disease to make that true.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you have to have progeria.
I have no idea.
It's Robin Williams movie.
Yeah, it is a Robin Williams movie where he has progeria and he ages faster than he actually is. So when he's 4, he's 16. When he's 16,
okay, yeah. Okay, I get what
you say. Progeria as if it's a real thing.
It is. Progeria is an actual disease.
That makes you age, like, faster.
Yeah, progeria.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
My world got a little bit bigger today.
Yeah.
A lot scarier, too.
Yeah, no, it is a congenital thing that that you get, and that you're born with, rather. That's what congenital means. And yeah, it just it sucks.
But yeah, so I thought that was kind of a neat angle. I'm a big fan of games that make whatever it is that allows you to live through death actually in world, which mm-hmm. they do. So that was kind of cool. So yeah, I really liked it. I liked the way it ended overall, although the last boss fight's kind of crap.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, I felt like the game was significantly longer than it needed to be.
Yep.
The biggest culprits, I'd say, would be twice they send you, maybe three times, on fetch quests that aren't really necessary.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the, you know, with the finding the cure for the plant disease and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that the last level is an escort quest.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, I feel like I'm guessing, you know, I will say it was kind of cool, like, you know, since the Big Daddies are kind of, well, they're the only good bosses in the game anyways.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of seeing it from the other side of it. That was kind of cool. And I guess I figured part of it was to try to kind of tee up the fact that the ending is very little sister centric.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked the when you get to the place where they're actually training the little sisters and the Big Daddies and all the, like, classical conditioning and stuff like that. That's really, really creepy.
Yeah.
So I would like to pour out, though, just something we kind of talked on the spoiler cast, the idea of, like, the them having written the games in such a way as to discourage sequels.
Mm-hmm.
There are at least well, I'm gonna leave off, there's at least one plot hole they still leave in Infinite, but I'm gonna leave off that because that's still kind of statute of limitations. But in this one, something they never quite do is they establish that it's in-world, that anyone with Andrew Ryan's DNA gets Vita chambered, mm-hmm. which means that post head golf, he should just have survived at the nearest Vita chamber.
True.
Huh. You know what? I never put that together.
That's good. That's absolutely right.
Huh.
So, yeah, we'll see if that becomes the next way they extend the series or not. But
thanks for coining the term head golf, by the way.
Is that when you just play through a game of golf in your head?
Sure. Yeah,
let's go
with
that. Exactly what
that means. No, your hypothalamus is, you know, your brainstem is kind of like a T, right?
Yeah, yeah. In this case, it was.
Huh.
Yeah. So I felt like compared to BioShock Infinite, I actually did not enjoy the game nearly as much as Infinite. I think part of it was the overall. Even if the gameplay, like, at least for most people that like the powers, was better, I felt like the actual structure of the game was better in Infinite, in terms of, like, everything in Infinite was directly you going towards your next goal, as opposed to, like, backtracking to collect things.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like Infinite had a much stronger storytelling structure. I also preferred the storyline much better. I mean, I think maybe part of that's because kind of, one, you have amnesia through almost all the game, and the world's basically crap when you get there, so you're not really anything to lose by killing more dudes.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's still a lot of great storytelling beats. You know, the, like I said, the little sisters training and stuff like that. There's still a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hmm.
And then the other thing I've been playing is, like I said, I picked up Resident Evil 6. Been playing that with Jala. I've just made it through, like, the first two chapters of Leon's campaign.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings. It's quite possibly one of the worst ports to PC I've ever seen.
How so?
The mouse and keyboard controls are just really, really bad. I think part of it, I'm not sure, is it does a weird thing where it's third person, but you're not directly behind the person's shoulder. You're kind of off to the side slightly.
Yeah.
So you're sort of controlling the entire game kind of diagonally. And I'm assuming that maybe on consoles where you have a little bit of sticky auto-aim, maybe that's not as big of a deal as is on PC. And then the other thing is, I feel like one of the big differences between a controller and keyboard is a keyboard you theoretically have more buttons available. But on a controller, you have more buttons in immediate, you know, reach, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the QuickTime stuff just doesn't work well with the keyboard. It's just very difficult to actually pull off on a keyboard.
Yeah.
And this game loves its QuickTime.
That it does.
Events on a keyboard would be like if you had to like type a word really fast. Like that would be about the equivalent.
If it turns into typing of the dead.
Yeah.
Shoot, nice. Shoot. Well, it's just things like, for example, like dodging is usually space plus some other button. I think usually like space plus R. So that's like if like, you know, you're in a minecart and you need to suddenly duck or something like that. And that's just not, you know, in the like one second window they give you, that's just not convenient to do.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly enough, like the pounding, you know, the space bar to break out of a hold, you know, you usually press the space bar with your thumb, and your thumb just doesn't have the dexterity to do it at the speed they need. It's just, I don't know, it's... But so far, the actual gameplay I'm really enjoying. I really like the wrecked up city a lot. It's a lot more interesting of a locale than in 5,
Africa.
And I like Leon as a character a lot more than Chris is who I played 5.
Well, yeah, and then also Chris is still in this one, so you get to experience that too.
yeah, I think, you know, I was kind of thinking it's sort of interesting that I feel like those are sort of the two like main action hero tropes is either, you know, Leon's kind of the a little bit of the, you know, Jason Bourne, you know, kind of martial arty here, whereas Chris is much more the, like, you know, John Wayne, like, brawler type thing. So I feel like that's sort of interesting, having two characters that are a little bit archetypical.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this hasn't been Monday. So yeah, shooting zombies is always fun. It's still a little bit strikes me as the whole, like, shooting the president, like, thing, that's still, I know, it seems to me like I've not played any of the Resident Evil games that were before Resident Evil got off the rails. It seems like it was the first several Resident Evil games that really kind of set up the world, and I've never played any of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like something that Resident Evil does is it tends to have some of the weird, like, we're going to raise the stakes in ways that don't quite make sense, like having the fact that zombies assassinated the president.
That's pretty much exclusive. I mean, there's some goofy stuff that happens in 1 through Code Veronica, but I would say that that is something that really, really took effect with 4 to a minor extent, and then with 5 and 6. Like, 6 is a very special breed of, like, trying to one-up itself. In fact, okay, I would say they one-up themselves in such a way that they can't even top it with the next one. So I kind of hope that whatever comes next is them turning back to something that is smaller.
So you hope they do a Goldfinger / Casino Royale thing?
Kind of, because, like, what else can they do besides zombies in space? You know, like, it's... yeah. You know, like, the Resident Evil has never been grounded, but...
See, and maybe that's what I'm saying. It seems to me like Resident Evil has always had a little bit of, like, weirdness, yeah, you know, a little bit of quirkiness to it. But I don't know if this is just, you know, me playing with Jala and she despises this character, so maybe it's running off. But has Ada always been that as annoying as she is in 6?
I mean, she's kind of always been, you know, a backstabber.
Lady in red.
Yeah.
She's just... I've not seen her much, but she's just really just annoying just in the characterization. I don't know.
I actually like what Resident Evil 6 did with Ada, honestly.
Okay.
Like, she is very central to the story.
Is she? Okay, maybe...
In a way that is pretty disturbing, actually. So okay. I think that there's going to be more there. I don't think that she's worth hating. She's just as she's a mercenary, right?
Okay. I know. Like, it's not. I would say at this point, like, not necessarily say it's just the characterization, just the way it's written so far, kind of whatever. But I'm really missing. I really want my Dead Space like stomp thing. Because there's all these times where these conveniently placed bodies on the ground. It's like, I know as soon as I flip the switch, you're going to, like, rise up. So can't I just, like, you know, stomp your head a little bit before that happens?
Mm-hmm.
But, oh well, good game.
Yeah. Is that all?
Yep.
Cool. Let's see here. How about you, Ben?
The aforementioned N64. I didn't play a whole lot this week because I went out of town, so I was doing a bunch of driving and vacationing and whatnot. But yeah, that was one highlight. Found some people who were eager to play Smash Brothers for N64, so that is always a good time.
Nice.
Yeah, those people did 5 stock with high items. Like fools.
Like fools.
3 stock, no items, of course. but this would actually be nice, good mental prep because I'm going to a convention this weekend. It's called Evo. It's in the town that I'm in right now in Vegas. But it's like...
the town.
But, you know, this is a small, quaint town. They have like a bunch of tournaments as far as like Smash Brothers, Street Fighter, stuff like that. It's all... not necessarily current consoles, but like last gen, like PS3 and Xbox 360. So I think the Injustice might be their most recent game that will be played there. But
oh, cool.
But yeah, I'm excited about that. So,
nice.
So yeah.
Did you word of advice, if you ever want to play the weirdest but maybe most ill-advised game mode ever, try Perfect Dark with only tranquilizers.
Oh man. So that's where it like drags the screen, right? It's the same thing as if you get punched.
Yeah, like
right?
halfway through it basically becomes a first-person shooter while everyone is tanked.
Yeah. Oh man, that and like the end bomb were so infuriating. The fact that it carries over to your next life. So that you like you respawn and you're groggy from your past life's fights. So, yeah. That part was so infuriating. But anyway, yeah. That's a good game. I do agree that more games need to put AI in the multiplayer. That opens the door to a lot of cool possibilities.
You're gonna have to let us know how Evo goes, because I have no insight into that world.
Is it all fighting games, or is it other games as well?
It's all fighting games, I believe. It's like I'm not competing or anything, but it's a BYOC event. Bring your own controller.
Yeah.
So like the actual tournament of it is on Sunday, and it's like all day. So I'll probably head over then and check it out. So
I always thought the whole bring your own controller thing was kind of like, you know, you pack your own parachute. No one to blame but yourself if things don't work.
It is a poor punchman who blames his controller.
I'm so incredibly bad at fighting games, but they are so much fun to watch.
Yeah,
they
totally.
They're so much fun. So, Ben, have you played anything else this week?
Nope, that's it. Because
that's the perfect segue on fighting games.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first off, I went to a place where a bunch of fighting games were being played. It's a place called Arcade Legacy.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Cincinnati. And I checked that out for the first time because I heard they had a nice set of pinball tables. I wanted to check that out. But I was amazed. I think I was there on like a Thursday night or something. So nothing special. And there were probably 30 people there at least, all doing like fighting games and tournaments and everything like that. So I knew it was an arcade. It was really nice because you just pay at the door. I want to say it's like $10 or something like that. And it's just everything is free play as much as you want and as long as you want. But that like most people were there for the fighting games, which I did not know such a strong community existed for that here in Cincinnati. So that was really kind of cool to see.
Here's a question. Do they have a bar or anything like that there?
Is there no, there's nothing. I mean, it's in the Cincinnati Mall. So,
Okay.
They've got a little counter where they do like buy and sell used games, and then it's just an arcade.
Mm. Yeah, according to their website, they have a new one coming out, Arcade Legacy Bar Edition.
Okay.
In fall of 2014, which is a pretty long way away. Basically, my question is, if I arranged a Duck Feed meetup for like Midwest with enough like time ahead, you know, to like notify people of it, would that be a viable place to go? But I wouldn't want to do that in a place that didn't have you know, some kind of alcohol amenities.
I think we've actually got a barcade now.
Yeah, they're opening one downtown.
Do they?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's open yet. Let's see. 126 West 6th Street.
Really?
Will soon reopen, and this is as of May 14th, this was posted, will soon reopen as Rosconi Pizza Pub and Barcade.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious. There was somebody on the Facebook group who mentioned Arcade Legacy, and I was curious because I didn't know that it existed. But,
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it like a pro grab? Is it worth going there?
You gotta be okay with it being a little bit smelly. It's definitely that kind of crowd. The pinball tables, which is what I was there for, are, you know, none of them are broken, but some of them are not the best maintained. They've got a really nice variety of fighting games. So if that's your thing, then go there. Cause I think that's why people go there. They've got a good amount of like shooting games. So like, you know, your Virtua Cop and Time Crisis and that sort of thing, as well as a surprising amount of kind of retro games. So the Star Wars trilogy cabinet is there.
Nice.
Got to play some of that. That was cool. What else? They had like the original Galaga and Centipede and stuff like that. And then they also had just up on a gigantic screen, Guitar Hero, which I was amazed how quickly I got back into that, or not Guitar Hero, Rock Band.
Oh, nice.
Where, you know, for the first like maybe verse of the song I played, I was kind of stumbling and trying to remember, and then it just clicked and I was right back into it. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a really good time. The only fighting game I was there with my wife, we played Dive Kick because that was really the only thing that was accessible to us.
Yeah.
And it was I didn't know there was an arcade version of it, but yeah, apparently there is. And literally, it's just two gigantic buttons, and it's a two button game. And there's like both of them jump, and then both of them kick. And depending on which order you press them in, you'll either like jump backwards and kick forwards, or jump straight up and kick forwards, or, you know, that sort of thing. And it's a one hit kill fighting game. So the first person to kick the other person wins, but you jump either, like I said, either backwards at a 45 degree angle or straight up. And then you kick downwards at a 45 degree angle. And if you both are kicking each other at the same time, whoever is highest wins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost got a flavor of the, not Bari Bari Ball. What was the pole vaulting
game? Oh, yeah, Super Pole Riders.
Super Pole Riders, yeah, Super Pole Riders. What was that Super Pole Riding game?
Yeah, it was...
So it's almost got that kind of flavor, where it's really simple and it's all about kind of your positioning versus, you know, the ability to execute in-depth combos, which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Does it still have the amazing, like, 8-bit, like, dialogue, you know? Dive Kick?
Yes, yeah, yes. That is fully intact.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the characters that Jen played as was just like a really, really fat guy wearing pajamas, complete with like a little blankie tucked in as a cape.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah, it's just funny stuff. It's $10 on PSN. I'll probably buy it if it ever hits $5. But it was overall a good experience. And, you know, I check out the Barcade before I recommend Arcade Legacy, mm-hmm, in terms of where to meet up.
Yeah. It's just something that's been kicking around in the noggin for a bit.
Yeah, I'd love to do some kind of meetup, so.
Yeah. Cool. What else, Dennis?
So, continuing fighting games and also playing off of the Super Smash Bros., I bought PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, which is Smash Bros.
Except with Parappa.
Yeah, I joke about that, and it's very much got the same aesthetic. But from my limited experience with Smash Bros., it plays incredibly different.
So,
same basic concept. It's kind of a relatively simple fighter with a large roster of characters from a bunch of different games. But you don't actually do damage to other characters with your normal attacks. So there's no like percent gauge or anything like that. The only thing that happens when you attack another character successfully is that you build your super gauge. And you can get your super up to level 1, to level 2, or level 3. So basically like 3 bars that you can fill up, and then cash in with a super attack. And the super attack is the only thing that can actually kill a character and give you points.
Yeah.
And so it's almost got... I want to say it encourages a little more reckless abandon. Because, you know, you're not losing health. If you get hit, you're just giving someone else a little bit of AP to use.
Mm-hmm.
Which again encourages you to be a little more offensive versus defensive. And every character kind of has different level 1, 2, and 3 supers. They're very widely in kind of how they operate. Most of them work really well. There are one or two real duds in there that's just like, don't even bother with, like Nathan Drake's level 1 super is horrible and
what
not
is
worth
it?
It. He throws out just like in the game, you can throw out a propane tank and then shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concept is really good. Like you throw out this thing in an arc in front of you and then choose when to detonate it.
Mm-hmm.
But in practice, like, you know, it's really, really easy to dodge. So, you know, it's only worthwhile for you to save up for a level 2 super. And I'm forgetting off the top of my head what that is. So there's that, you know, most of the level 1 supers do kind of a immediately in front of you attack. And you can, you know, so that's level one. Level two either does kind of makes you powered up for a short period of time where any of your regular attacks then actually kill people, or does some kind of cross screen dash where you it's still kind of a linear attack, but you can cover a lot of ground with it. And then the level three supers also vary widely, but usually it's big enough that you will be able to kill the entire roster of characters on the screen. So all other three players, if not more than once, or if not once, then more than once. So it's kind of, there's a great risk reward though as well, because there are certain attacks or situations or special items that can suck away your AP. And so if you're if you want to save up for a level three, not only do you have to build up that AP, but you also have to defend against getting hit with one of these special attacks to take it away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's incredibly fun. And of note, Jen is way, way better at it than me. So, you know, most of the time we do co-op games, because we're kind of working together towards the same goal. And in any 2D platformer, she's easily as good as me. But when it comes to like competitive stuff, just because I'm a little more familiar with the language of it, I tend to, you know, outpace her a little bit. And fighting games are only as fun as your competition, right?
Yeah.
And the important thing is to have competition that is evenly matched. So that's, you know, that gets tough for us in competitive matches most of the time. When I got the game, I was like, oh, hey, I got this thing. It's kind of like Super Smash Bros. Do you want to try it? And she's like, oh, you know, I think I've played Super Smash Bros. Once or twice. That could be fun. And then just proceeds to kick my ass all across the stage. I was like, I think you've played a little more than a little of Super Smash Bros. but it might just be that I'm uniquely bad at fighting games, or she's found her niche. But it's a ton of fun, and I'm definitely overmatched right now, or I'm definitely, you know, out of my league. But I'm kind of slowly getting better, and the games where I can like actually win are triumphs. But it, you know, there's a lot of trash talking going on in the Furia household right now, so that's a ton of fun.
That's great.
Yeah, I have not had the courage to take it online yet, but. We'll see what that community is like.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. Just from people who I play, from people who I know who are non gamers, they speak very highly of it. In terms of it kind of being one of the only things they play, especially online.
Really, that's interesting. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of that decision that attacks build up your AP versus taking away someone else's health, because I think that allows a new player to get knocked around a lot without necessarily being out of the game, because then, you know, when a super attack comes, you've always got that opportunity to dodge.
Yeah.
And you're never in a position where it's like, oh my God, my gauge is at 130 and I just need to like run and hide or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I think excludes a lot of people from Super Smash Bros, especially when you're playing with someone who's really good at it, is you feel like you're being overpowered. Whereas this, it feels like, you know, maybe you're given away a little more AP than everyone else, but you know, you still feel like you're in it.
How does that sound to you, Ben? I mean, as somebody who is probably more acquainted with Smash Brothers than me.
That's an interesting dynamic change. Cause yeah, it's rewarding people for getting in the fray of it, you know? So like, whereas with Smash Brothers, if you have like one life left and you're kind of down or whatever, it kind of pays to stay away from the fighting and kind of take pot shots or whatever. But it seems like that strategy wouldn't really pan out in this game. So that's kind of interesting. I'd like to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whenever you're in town, we'll have to stage a tournament.
We'll have to both get beat by Jen.
Yeah. just prepare. It's embarrassing at this point. So hopefully I'll be mediocre at it by the time you get here.
All right.
Nice. Anything else?
A game called, I'm going to mess up this name, one sec. See, I'm using Backloggery so I can look at the title of the game. it's a PlayStation Vita game called Muramasa Rebirth.
Yeah.
It's an RPG, has the most beautiful graphics I've ever seen. Yeah. Kind of the characters in a little bit of an anime style, but just the backgrounds are so bright and varied and you know, detailed, and it's just really, really beautiful looking. But it's an RPG that is definitely an action RPG. It's a 2D kind of interface, so you're running just back and forth across the screen, and it's got a lot of real fighting game characteristics to it. So, you know, your square button is attack, and you do different attacks based on the direction that you're holding. Your circle button is a special ability that depends on what sword you're using, and then the triangle button is change swords. But if you press the triangle button at the right point, changing swords is actually an attack in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And so it's super fast-paced combat, on par with any God of War or Devil May Cry or anything like that. And it's all about managing your special attacks and when you change swords. All couched in this kind of greater RPG. So it's a ton of fun. I haven't spent too much time with it, but the first time I played it, I was absolutely hooked, and I'll definitely be playing that one for a while.
Yeah, it's made by the people who made Odin Sphere. I forget the name of the studio, but that delivers on a promise that I really wish happened more often, which is, you know, we switched to high definition and everything, you know, that happened long after 3D was the thing. What I want more of is very lush, hand-drawn, kind of like 2D art.
You know, holy crap, it's Atlas.
Atlas published it, but it's a different Muramasa.
I'm searching.
You know, I may have just been a dick and said something. Developed Vanillaware. There we go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who also did Odin Sphere and Dragon's Crown, which is like, you know, you have all that power, and I understand the 2D assets are really, really expensive to make, but like, mm-hmm. what I've wanted for a good long while is a Castlevania game done in that, you know, done like that. Like, take the DS Castlevania concepts, really mm-hmm. blow it out and make it like just pixel perfect in terms of hand-drawn animated art. Yeah,
and this does that very well.
Just too bad it would never sell.
Yeah. Although I think this is even a remake of
a PS2/Wii game.
Yeah. Wii, yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, that's correct. The other thing I'll just say about it is that I've only encountered one boss fight so far, but it was really, really fun and really well balanced. And I know we compare everything to Dark Souls on this network, but it had that element of everything felt fair, and I died countless times to him. But every time I died, I knew exactly what I did wrong.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll do mine, and I will try my best to be snappy with it, just because I know we're running up on time, and I want to be, considerate of everybody. Looking at this here, so over the course of vacation, I beat Antechamber. Mm-hmm. I didn't clear all of the signs. Are you familiar with this game?
Nope.
Okay.
It's like Portal on Acid, right?
Yeah. It's very Portal-esque, except it's one big cohesive world, or non-cohesive world, because this is utilizing all of the Source Engine's wacky geometry kind of stuff. So as you are walking around, the world can change behind you, and it's very maze-like, and all of the puzzles kind of hinge around you trying to learn the rules of this crazy, messed up, kind of, I would even go as far as say topology of this place, because up is not always up and down isn't always down, and paths kind of branch out, except they don't branch in a linear fashion.
Yeah. Go on, yeah. I'm listening.
Yeah. No, it's really good. There are some parts of it that are kind of bullshit insofar as the puzzles only make sense after you have solved them. So something Portal does really well, and you know, you can lodge any complaints about, you know, against Portal about it being too easy or a little bit too kind. I don't think you can do that. I think that Portal succeeds really well in teaching you in teaching you the rules as you go along, right? And mm-hmm. it doesn't require you to personally upgrade your gun, except at the very beginning of, you know, Portal 1, where they give you just one portal, and you're just, trying to get around with that, as opposed to having both of them and being able to create your own connections. Like, really what Portal does is it gives you all of your own tools to begin with, and it forces you to learn around those, to adapt to them, you know, to adapt to the environments, as opposed to the other way around. In Antechamber, you have a gun, which doesn't affect the geometry at all, except that the gun picks up and also puts down blocks. Okay. Yeah. Like tiny little blocks that can be used to, you know, block laser beams and stuff like that. And a good deal of the puzzles are revolve around taking those and managing your limited supply of them. And so it's kind of like, oh, I need to block 7 laser beams, but I only have 6 of the, you know, I only have 6 of the blocks. What am I going to do? An example of a rule that they don't teach you, that you just kind of have to either look at a fact to figure out, is that if you draw a square with the blocks, it'll fill in the middle, effectively giving you an uninterrupted supply of blocks. But up until the time when you learn that, you just think that this is an impossible puzzle that you can't solve. Or, you know, you are kind of like running around. Go ahead.
So you can make an infinite number of blocks from this?
Yeah, pretty much. So, like, if you only have enough to make a tiny little square so that it creates one block in the middle where the hole is, then, yeah, you get that. But you do that enough times, you can make a bigger square and a bigger square and a bigger square, and you can hold an infinite number of them as long as you have the patience to do that. You know, which some puzzles require you to do that. However, it doesn't tell you, you know, at that time. So it feels like a brick wall. You know, forgive my pun there. Walking into it. Good.
So you would say it feels more like they don't explain mechanics as opposed to just it being puzzles that are kind of oblique.
Kind of, yeah. I would say that. There are definitely a lot of mechanics that they don't explain. There's also, you know, there are several puzzles that you can't solve without the use of a special gun. So, you know, you upgrade your gun as you go along. And there is a definite progression that you follow. However, it's possible to bang your head up against a wall with a particular puzzle before you realize, oh, I just don't have the right gun, which kind of feels unforgivable to me. Don't let me go into that area with that puzzle until I'm able to solve it with the things at hand. You know?
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Yeah, and because of the nonlinear structure of this thing, and, you know, the idea of 100% completing it, you do have kind of like a map that you can, you know, default back to that shows it. But, it's, you know, because of the nature of the space, it's really not that helpful. And there's kind of the notion of diminishing returns, which you get like when you're trying to go after pigeons in Grand Theft Auto 4, the hidden packages or whatever, which is like the more of them you find, the harder it is to find the next one. So that finding the last one, if you're not following some kind of guide or map, is several orders of magnitude harder than finding the, you know, the halfway one or any of the other ones, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, with this one, you're like, okay, I got this new gun. Well, shit, where do I go next? Because there's either these places I haven't been, or there's all of this map territory that I've uncovered that I just, you know, have to remember that I go back to. So it means when you get an upgrade or when you figure out a new skill, it's like, well, I guess I'd better just run through this entire world again, seeing if there's a place for me to use these skills together.
Yeah. The game is absolutely gorgeous. I'm looking at pictures of it online right now. Like, it looks almost like pen drawn as a base, only with sections filled in with like bright neon Sharpie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, it takes place like in just this white void. And all of it is you know, just black lines, except where there's color's introduced, right? And I'm like, I'm so into the space bending stuff. Like, this is taking the vagaries of the Source Engine and saying, like, if we apply this to a horror game, it would be House of Leaves and it would be great.
You know? I've always wished there was a multiplayer shooter like that, where, like, you know, to flank someone at the end of a hallway, you could just run down the adjacent hallway, which is much shorter, but then winds up putting you behind them.
Yeah,
like those are
so like Looney Tunes style.
A little bit, like Duke Nukem 3D maps could actually achieve that because of the way they map space out. Like, you could have crazy impossible things like things that happen in this, like a spiral staircase that just infinitely goes up until you turn around and the you know, the way out is right there, you know?
And then the Minotaur gets you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is there actually any storyline or anything?
They hint at it, but it's really oblique. After you solve puzzles, you get signs, or before the puzzles. It's really annoying, too, because you will solve the puzzle, and then the sign that you get to after it will say what the solution was. Like, sometimes patience helps. It's like, well, shit. You know, like, is this supposed to, like, and most of the time it's not something you can carry to the next thing. So it's not like they're accumulating player knowledge. It's just kind of like, what about that thing you did? Like, that would have been really valuable, like, 15 minutes ago, dog.
So they're about as useful as the signs in World of Goo.
I mean, kind of. I mean, there were the signs in World of Goo actually did elucidate a little bit of what was happening, right? That was some world flavor text. And the sign writer was also a character in the game, you know?
Yeah, I never finished. That's in my backlog.
Yeah, it's a really good game. Huh. Yeah. So it's, I would recommend it again for the novelty of it. I would just say, don't be ashamed if you're stuck to go to a FAQ or something to try and look it up, because even though it is a puzzle game and solving the puzzles is entirely the point of this, maybe they could have made it a little bit more friendly and approachable. And like I said, giving you a puzzle that you can't solve because you don't have the actual tools, or they never explained the basic principle behind it and didn't ramp you up to a place where you could teach the principle to yourself, you know, the game isn't playing fair, so you shouldn't play fair back. So play it to see all of the cool stuff, and then just do what you can to obviate the bullshit.
Reminds me a little bit of the way kind of La Mulana felt, where, you know, very similar thing, where, you know, a lot of the difficulty was just in the fact that, you know, it pretty much throws everything at you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know at least in this one, I wonder if it would be the same. Some of the problem was even knowing when you need the, you know, need to check an FAQ, because it's, you know, sort of was so bleak, you know, like you said, like, is this something I'm not understanding, or is this a new gun I need? You know, kind of those sorts of things.
Yeah. And it could have been either. Like, if it was just constantly something, oh, I'm just not understanding it, what that would tell me is, like, go back or restart a new file or something and play again and be more cognizant. It won't take you as long to get back to where you were, but if you're paying attention, you're going to be able to pick up what they're trying to teach you, if they were right. Indeed trying to teach you something through. And all of this is taking into account that I could just be entirely just way too dense. So, you know, that is always a possibility I'm willing to admit. But, yeah, I mean, it was enough to get me through to the end. I didn't 100% it, but who has time for that? Not me, because I'm going to be playing Shovel Knight. But go ahead, Ben. Yeah, it sounded like you had a question.
I was just going to make a snarky comment. We can continue.
Okay. Yeah.
Are you actually playing Shovel Knight?
Yeah.
It's not on Mac. I tried to get by it like day and date. And
yep. No, so that's one of the nice things about having the Windows machine in the living room. Yeah, dudes, like Shovel Knight is OG legit, like super good. I feel so, maybe it's just because I listen to a bunch of video game podcasts. I feel like everybody is talking about it probably more eloquently than I could. Or, you know, everybody's kind of making a lot of the same points. So I feel kind of goofy, but I will try to do what I can to bring a little bit of new insight. For anybody who's listening who hasn't figured this out or hasn't heard this elsewhere or played it yourself, shame on you. Shovel Knight is a modern kind of reimagining of like an NES game, of an NES platformer. So you play as this dude, he's got a shovel, which you can use to attack in front of them to flip enemies over or hit them. Or also, if you jump and hold down, you do a DuckTales or Zelda 2-esque sword pogo kind of thing, where you can bounce on enemies. And it looks like an NES game and sounds like an NES game and has all of the kind of the character wit and charm of an NES game that arises from, you know, some of the inscrutable design decisions that they probably had to make, or just here is just this weirdness of this nascent, you know, form of entertainment, right? So there are, you know, all the enemies are kind of goofy, like, you know, frog people kind of things. There are towns kind of like a Bionic Commando or Zelda 2, actually, where NPCs are walking around. And there's just like a lot of goofy stuff that doesn't feel like lol random. There's not a cynical bone in this game's body, which actually makes it feel really great compared to something like Retro City Rampage, which was, remember this thing, guys? You know, like this feels entirely of its own thing. Like the biggest reference that it makes is to, again, Zelda 2 and DuckTales. But like the person that you buy your health or mana upgrades from is like the, oh gosh, it's like the goatician, like the goat magician. He's like a humanoid goat kind of guy. The kind of like a minor deity that you buy your potions from is called the Trouble, which is a gigantic trout mixed with an apple. That whenever you go and buy,
horrifying.
Yeah, yeah. Takes up most of the screen. It looks like a Mega Man 2 boss. you know, like one of the big Wily's castle ones. That when you go to get potions, it's not potions. It's like delicious ichor or something. He does this big dance with all of his little trapple guys. Like doing synchronized, like, you know, Bellagio fountain kind of things up and down, and it takes a really long time. And you can dance along by ducking and standing back up. It's a bunch of like little things like that, and like the bosses of each individual stage. So you move around like in a Super Mario 3 type fashion. That they're all different kinds of knights, kind of like you. So there's like the Spectral Knight and the Black Shovel Knight and all these different things. And it has that NES kind of dialogue to it where it's real short and clipped. Yeah. And the platforming is really tough and challenging. Like I would call the jump arc is not exactly like Castlevania, because you can affect your your velocity, or you can move around well in midair. But it's definitely not as like floaty or forgiving as a Mario is. So you have to be real precise, and the stuff that's asking you to do, even as early on as I am in the game, it's real. It requires a lot. And if you die, again, like Dark Souls, because everything on this network has to relate to that, you drop a certain portion of your gold, and it floats around as adorable little money bags with wings that you have to go back and collect. You know. And if you die before you get back to it, that gold is lost forever. And most of the time, that gold is hovering over a very dangerous drop, because most of my deaths have been to bottomless pits so far.
Ooh, but that's
like,
rough.
Yeah. There's like a checkpointing system where as you pass them, you can respawn there. But if you are real confident, you can destroy the checkpoint in order to get a huge cash payout at the expense of effectively making the level twice as long if you... if you fail.
Now, does this have the same syndrome in terms of economy that every game has, where like by halfway through you have enough money to buy everything and then some?
I have no idea. Like, you have this artifact system, which is pretty cool, and also reminiscent of, you know, Bionic Commando, where you have different kinds of spells that you can cast by pressing up and B, including you can buy a fishing line and fish over certain pits to get more treasure.
Huh.
Yeah.
You're actually getting all the money from all the other times you died.
I think so. Yeah. And so, you're absolutely right to suggest that, Dennis. However, I think they're setting it up that there will always be something a little bit interesting to buy for that. Also, mm-hmm. You can use your money to upgrade your health and magic, and that is pretty expensive. So,
Very cool.
Yeah. So. It's great. Like it's like I said, you know, and that's my biggest takeaway from it. It feels very heartfelt and genuine. And, you know, most people are focusing on like, oh, it really emulates the NES style, but it takes all these technical liberties, and, you know, it emulates the music, but it, okay, they don't have to mute the sound effects channel to whatever up and down the line. It doesn't feel crass. Like, it is it is retro without being like, hey, do you remember when you could see pixels? it doesn't trade on kind of the easy stuff that a bunch of like retro, and that's spelled retreaux, faux retro games, you know, kind of do. It feels like it comes from a very like honest place that is goofy without being mercenary, that is hard without being, hey guys, look at us. Yeah, like it's a really great cohesive work that I can't wait for it to get on as many platforms as possible, because it's really great.
What have these people done before, or what are they planning on doing next? Like, I'd never heard of Yacht Club Games before this.
I think this is it. So this game was kickstarted.
Really? By like people who had never done something like this before?
Yeah, this is their first and only game.
That is incredible.
The guy here, the lead designer, came from WayForward Technologies, which mostly does a bunch of like similar retro remake kind of things. So it's looking at their list of stuff. It is a bunch of like licensed games, and then also like Contra 4 and Aliens Infestation, which is a great game. Like, just a bunch of the A Boy and His Blob remake. They did Silent Hill, The Book of Memories, which is not something to their credit. They did DuckTales Remastered. So yeah, so like they have like the talent pool from that. But it was founded by one of the directors from that. His name is Sean Velasco. So, but like in terms of like as a studio, they can't point to a previous body of work and say, here's the shit that we as Yacht Club Games have done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool that their first has been so successful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a really exciting game that I knew nothing about until the morning that it was released. A bunch of reviews went up. I was like, this seems curious. And I read the Polygon review. Griffin McElroy wrote it. Second McElroy worked in. And I was like, wow, this sounds like exactly like what I want. And then at 2 o'clock that day, I was like, bye.
Yeah.
So I bought a game at full price during the Steam sale.
That's funny. What an odd time to launch.
Yeah. I don't think it was intentional.
Uh-huh.
Well, because the Steam sale was pretty significantly early this year.
Yeah, usually the Steam sale is the first or second week of July. Yeah, it caught me off guard too. Yeah, so that's all I'm going to hit. Is there any? Are there any other questions about Shovel Knight?
Speak to the plot a little bit. You mentioned the different kinds of knights, but is there like a real uniting reason that you're doing everything you're doing?
The idea is that Shovel Knight and his lady friend, or a special lady, Shield Girl. Shield Girl was kidnapped by the Enchantress, or no, the Illusionist, or something like that. evil wizard lady, and she has an order of knights. It's the Order of No Quarter, and it's pretty good. And Shovel Knight is going to rescue Shield Girl. And her Order of No Quarter are the people who are, you know, guarding each of the stages. And that is literally the entire story. And most of the rest of it, like, you know, when you're talking to villagers, it's just a bunch of like quirk. And again, I use that in the non-cynical way. This isn't like, ooh, I wear fingerless gloves level of quirk. This is like the Gotician.
Yeah.
You know, it's mostly world flavor and just like this bizarre, whimsical place that could only be imagined in an 8-bit game.
Cool.
Yeah. So I actually have more, but we've been going for a long time, and I would like to save those and relish them. What I will say, so I like notebooks a lot, and Field Notes is a company that I use. They're not a sponsor, but they make a good one. And I have a new way of keeping notes for this particular show because they made a product that is specifically made for me, I think. I think they finally responded to my letters. It is a small notebook that has a black cover. Usually their covers are brown or very bright colors. And on the inside, they've never offered this option before. It is not lined. It is not graphed. There's no squares. It's dots.
Like dots and lines?
It is as though there were a grid, except all that's there is the intersections.
It's a lattice.
Oh.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that a lattice?
I believe that might be a lattice. So
we'll have to get our fact checkers for
lattice.
Yeah, so I will keep those in the notebook for now.
Wait, you can play dots with your friends. I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
What's the company?
Field Notes?
Field Notes. I've not heard of those.
Yeah. Really good. If you buy a lot of notebooks like I do, you'll enjoy them. I figure if I say their name enough, they'll give me money, right?
That's how that works.
You ever tried those? Were they moleskin or mole?
Yeah, I've got
something?
A bunch of those. All of my WAF notebooks are those.
Hmm?
Yeah. No, they're good. They're well made. They're expensive. They have a bad reputation for being stuff that pretentious fiddly artists types buy and then never fill up. But I fill all mine up, so that's no problem. You know, it's, you know. I figure you can only be called a special little snowflake who spends too much money on notebooks if you don't actually fill them up, which I don't have that problem.
Yeah, that is by definition not too much money on snowflakes.
Wait, what?
Or on notebooks, not snowflakes.
Wait, how did snowflakes get in here?
You know, special little snowflakes, look at me. I'm going to buy a leather-bound notebook, and I'm going to fill it with my next novel. Blah, 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 blah. Well, thank you so much. That was an episode of The Level. I forget exactly which one. 67, I believe. I don't know.
It's getting old.
What's that?
It's getting old.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've been getting our AARP here for a while. That's good. Yeah, it is 67. Those bonus levels always mess me up.
That's what it is. We've had 2 weeks of bonus levels.
Yeah. Oh, well. But thank you, everybody, for listening. There are things you can do. What I want to remind everybody, we do have that Amazon affiliate link. And also, in the intervening time here, I have added the United Kingdom and also Canada to that list. So when you go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and buy stuff off of Amazon, there's a little, you have options. Yeah, because we're all about options and choice, right? And so just select your region where you're at, buy your thing. And it doesn't cost you anything extra, but there is a small amount that is kicked to the network that is used to fund programs like this and other things that are in development. So I appreciate that. In addition, for this particular show, we have a Facebook group that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. It's been a minute since we've gotten a review, rating or review. So if you're listening and you have not done that, we would greatly appreciate if you did. So head on over to iTunes and do that, please. Am I missing anything for this show?
Tell a friend. Always tell a friend.
Yes, always tell a friend. In fact, if you tell a friend, let us know.
We will hook you up.
Yeah.
We'll give them the special first-time discount, which is free.
Yes. Everything here is free. So
also the second, third, fourth, and ongoing time discount.
You know, it's
N+1 time discount.
Yeah. 80 episodes. Good.
We would be really bad drug dealers.
Man. Well, I want to go to bed, guys, so why don't we just do that thing? I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Mysmith, at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel. I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And I haven't picked a title yet, so just... be safe, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can never go wrong with be safe.
Eat the leg. Stay in your box.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hello.
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 Hello. Sup?
Hello. You broke it. We were exchanging hellos.
Combo breaker.
I hope you were recording that.
Yep. Outro.